Hey, it's Farnoosh, and if I had to go back to my 19-year-old self and share her my one big piece of financial wisdom that I've learned in these 25 years, it's this. You can't save your way to wealth. You can't save your way to a comfortable retirement. You have to invest your money. Luckily, I got started in my early 20s. I learned that lesson early on, and I want to share the wisdom. I want to share what I've learned over these last 20-plus years investing in the stock market. I don't pick stocks. I don't pay lots of money to work with experts, and I've amassed a seven-figure portfolio slow and steady. I'm teaching my very unsexy tricks on Monday, April 29th, live at 3 p.m. Eastern. Go to sowmoneyworkshop.com to learn more and save your spot. Go to sowmoneyworkshop.com and sign up for my investing masterclass. Even if you can't make it live, everyone who registers will get the recording.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 1649, Kids and Money, How to Teach Your Young Ones to Think Before They Buy with Karen Holland, founder of Gifting Sense.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
If you think about the adage, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, it's just so much easier to raise kids who are comfortable talking about, thinking about, and using money than it is to help adults re-engineer what might turn out to be for them unproductive approaches to earning, spending, saving, sharing, and investing.
Welcome to So Money, everybody. I'm Farnoosh Torabi, dedicating this episode to all the parents and caregivers out there who want to raise money-savvy kids. You've got a child in your life who's maybe between the ages of 8 and 12. These are the years to instill good money habits, but how do you do it? Well, my guest today says it starts with teaching them about spending smart, thinking before they buy. Karen Holland is our guest. She's the founder of the nonprofit Gifting Sense, and she's on a mission to give every 10 to 14-year-old around the globe a firsthand experience getting and using basic financial information to make their lives better. She's formulated what's called a DIMS score, the Does It Make Sense score. And she's going to walk us through how to implement this with kids before any purchase and how it can help us have a more guided discussion about spending, needs versus wants. A little bit more about Karen's background. She was a sovereign risk analyst at Canada's largest bank before having a family. Her family's now all grown up, and she's been volunteer teaching middle school students how to think before they buy for over 8 years. Gifting Sense has been recognized at the Money Awareness and Inclusion Awards for 2 years running, and I'm excited to bring her on the show now. Here's Karen Holland. Karen Holland, welcome to So Money. It's great to have you on the show. You know, I've been wanting to do an episode on kids and money for a while. I've done many episodes on kids and money, but not yet in 2024. And you're the best expert. We met at my recent live podcast event on the Upper West Side at MM Lafleur, which just aired. Everybody go check out that episode with Sarah Lafleur. You were in the audience and came up to me and shared a little bit about your body of work, which for so long now you've been such an advocate for kids and families, helping young people essentially get equipped with the important information and tools to make smart money choices, spending choices, especially as they grow older. Tell us about Gifting Sense. This is your longtime organization and you're changing lives, but tell us about Gifting Sense and how it originated.
Well, it's so great to be here. I mean, I've followed you for a long time. I've read your books. I feel, even though I'm a lot older than you, I think we have quite a bit in common. So Gifting Sense is a free public good. It's a mission-driven organization. And our goal is to help children prepare for all the personal finance decisions that lie in their future by teaching them how to think before they buy. Now, why thinking before buying? Yeah. Well, I have an answer, of course.
Okay. So you're just gonna host the show as well, by the way. And you're gonna ask the question.
I get asked this question all the time. So I say to people, you know, parents, school administrators, community center leaders, when we're scheduling workshops, why is it when we have more fantastic financial information than ever before, really in the history of the planet, right? So why is it that citizens around the globe continue to struggle with successfully managing their personal finances, even though we're really at this unprecedented period of time? And my belief is the answer is because very little of that fantastic information feels relevant during childhood.
Right.
And in behavioral economics, the technical term is money script, but I call it a money personality. So these are all the habits and beliefs we have about money, and they inform how we think and act with it our whole life. And your money personality, of course, is established right alongside your social personality, which means it happens during childhood. Mm. So if you think about the adage, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, it's just so much easier to raise kids who are comfortable talking about, thinking about, and using money than it is to help adults re-engineer what might turn out to be for them unproductive approaches to earning, spending, saving, sharing, and investing. And thinking before buying is just a really powerful, easy to teach and sticky life skill for kids.
Yeah. You chose to focus on the transaction piece, the buying piece, the shopping spending piece, as opposed to like investing or, you know, credit. Why is this so foundational, this part of our financial education?
Think about it. What did children before high school really get to do? What's practically achievable for them? Shopping.
Right.
Right. I mean, and middle school is this developmental sweet spot because they have all sorts of capability and agency. You know, they can get themselves to and from school. They're starting to have a little bit of choice, maybe what they take. And they're also starting to earn a little bit of money. This is when allowance really comes to play. They start getting gifted money for holiday and birthday gifts. They can earn money. You know, an 11-year-old can take the Red Cross babysitting course. So If you want, you know, there's a dictum in financial literacy that financial information has to feel relevant to feel helpful.
Yeah.
So those other things are important, but they're not relevant for children, right?
Yeah.
What's immediately helpful for children is being able to spend your birthday money, your holiday money, your allowance in the best way possible for you.
You do this through this education that you do with schools and organizations and throughout communities, is that you offer hands-on interactive workshops and you introduce these school-age children to what's called DIMS. It's an acronym. Does it make sense? It's a score calculator. Tell us about this and how, if I can't attend one of your workshops, how I can replicate this in my own home, in my own community with kids.
So, well, the workshops exist because it's actually against the law to market to children under 13. So that makes it tricky, right? When you, when you're really targeting, I'm really targeting 10 to 14 year olds. So if you can't market to kids under 13, how do you get through them? So schools are a conduit through which we pass, right? But parents at home can absolutely do this with their kids. Right. The DIM score calculator, that acronym, as you said, stands for Does It Make Sense score. It's just, it's really a questionnaire, and it gets kids into the habit of asking and answering simple questions about typical childhood purchases before anybody spends any money. And it takes minutes, but guess what happens? You answer those questions and you can avoid disappointment, reduce waste, improve family harmony, and protect the planet all at once for free for weeks, months, sometimes years. Like, not bad, right? For 3 or 4 minutes on your magic box.
Give us an example. Can you give us an example?
Yeah. So when you first click on the DIM score calculator, we have two silos. So it's an item or an experience. And then in items you choose, there's another six silos under that, like electronics, toys, clothes, sports equipment, all the standard stuff. And it's literally like the first question is, how much does it cost? How much does sales tax and shipping add, right? I mean, in the case of an experience, when you think about it, like most family discord about spending between parents and kids stems from answering the question, what's the big deal, right? The kids are like, oh, what's the big deal? I just want to go to the movies. So, well, the big deal for most families is not the movie ticket. It's how do you get there and back safely? And the fact that you need on average 2x the price of a movie ticket for popcorn and soda. So when kids are given a tool that lets them quickly, but not arbitrarily, lay bare the facts of a purchase, well, all of a sudden they know what the big deal is as well. So that's how it improves family harmony. The exciting thing is kids stop themselves. I mean, I see it every week, you know, around the holidays, sometimes parents get anxious and they're like, oh, this is going to become an espionage tool for my children to, you know, they're going to be standing at the kitchen table waving that shareable summary because they can produce a shareable summary of all the math and thinking they've gone through when they calculate the Doesn't Make Sense score. But I see it all the time. Children are very money aware of their family's situation.
Yeah.
And Super Bowl, perfect example. Every late January, February, kids are calculating the Doesn't Make Sense score for Super Bowl tickets in workshop.
I tell you right now, the answer is no.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, they don't even get halfway through. The minute they discover that this is a thousands of dollar proposition, they know that doesn't make sense for them and their family. So half the time they want to abandon ship and we're like, no, you're just being introduced to a process. Hang in there.
But I have a follow-up question to this. So you're 10 years old and you do the calculation, the DIM score for the movies, and you're like, okay, it's going to cost $35. What is the context that the child needs to make a decision as to whether or not, I mean, so there's the score, but does the score take into account what your family can actually do and what's feasible? Because like my daughter is six. Well, now she's seven. She just turned seven. And she watched me hand over $200 to her dance instructor because it was 2 months worth of dance instruction. So it's like $100 a month for her to get dance classes. And her mind was blown. She was like, I can't believe how expensive this is. And she's a people pleaser. So she's like, maybe I shouldn't come anymore. And I felt like I should not have had her in that scene. You know, like I probably should have protected her from that because I don't want her to have anxiety, false anxiety around a cost that we can afford. But for her, like $200 is like $2 million, right? So she has like, you know, $30 in her piggy bank that she has saved for like years, you know? So this is like a lot of money for mom to be just handing to some person. So I guess that's my question is like, she's seven, she's not your target age student, but if you're 10 and you don't know like actually how much money your parents can afford or what they're willing to afford for certain experiences or things, how does the score stack against that?
So DIM scores are personal. They're not universal. So when you go through the whole process, the questions, for example, are, do you have a sibling or a cousin who could use this when you're done with it? If you're upgrading a piece of technology or sports equipment, can you sell the one that you've grown out of or grown out or the technology that doesn't work anymore and help the use the proceeds from that sale to help fund the purchase of an upgrade. So all of these questions are designed to allow a child to have a productive conversation with their parents about turning a wish list item into reality. I mean, one question I get all the time is, because our benchmark is 8. If you can't generate a doesn't make sense score of 8 or greater, there's a little, we tell you, okay, this maybe isn't going to make sense. And there's a little pink tell me why button and the kids can click on it. And then we take them through all the ways they can boost their DIM score. So what a score of 8 means is that you probably have enough information to sit down and have a good conversation with your parents. It doesn't mean you have carte blanche. It doesn't mean like around the world, like, you know, for example, you can't say, you know, Air Jordans always get a DIM score of X because it's a very personal score. How often are you going to wear them? Can somebody else in your family wear them? Are you going to spend some of your own money? You know, can you get them from a store that doesn't require a long drive? Like all of these things, right? So it's a very personal experience. And I love that you use the word context, because one question that kids always ask me is, okay, let's say I do this and the answer is still no. So the child goes through the process, they generate a DIM score of 8 or greater, and they decide that they would like to proceed with the purchase. And so they go and talk to their parents and the answer is no. So in my experience, there's two reasons why the answer is no. If it's an experience they're asking for, it's maybe just not yet age appropriate. You know, parents don't think you're old enough to take public transportation without an adult yet. The other circumstance is what they're asking for is just so expensive that a family needs time to put a plan in place and save up for it. The other interesting thing that's happened, which I didn't set out for this to be the case, but it's just, you know, this is the great thing about anything digital. It's so iterative. Families use that shareable summary to graciously crowdfund larger, more meaningful gifts. So, and I've never met a grandparent or an aunt and uncle who wouldn't rather put $30, $40 towards something that will actually be used and appreciated versus earrings that never get worn, books that don't get read, games that don't get played, right? So what I say to the kids is think about those no's. No, you're not old enough. No, we can't do this right now, but maybe we can save up and do it in the summer. Those are no's with context, with information wrapped around them. And those are no's that over time can move to a yes. You know, one example I use is I'll say to them, do you know any kindergartners who walk to school by themselves? Nobody does. Do you know any high school seniors who walk to school holding their parents' hand? Nobody does. And what's the good news about that? Things change as we move through childhood. And that's but it's so just important. They have, they're great conversations to have. And it's sort of like their little PowerPoint. But, you know, I'm telling you, they stop themselves. This is the exciting thing. Wow. And then the parents love it because you're getting fewer, better quality requests to spend.
Hmm. Yeah. Your point about making it not a dead end, like a no is not forever. I've heard this now from a number of child behavioral experts, money experts who work with families, kids, that when you become an adult, a lot of times adults that have scarcity issues around money may have grown up in a home that either was the money was really scarce. That's a reality, but that they heard no a lot. We can't do this. We can't afford this. This is not what we spend our money on. And so it felt very much like a non-starter. And as a result, as adults, they may go on spending benders where they overspend and they over, utilize the credit cards because they're, you know, it's just like it's the effect, right? It's the psychological effect of always being told no. It's a rebellion. All right. Let's talk about some of your findings in having worked with so many kids. I loved these observations that you've made because some of these are not what we typically think about kids when it comes to kids and money. One is that kids are interested in money. And I'd love for you to talk a little bit about this and how they might demonstrate their interest that maybe something that parents and educators could miss, and it's a missed opportunity.
Well, they're so earnest when they answer questions, right? Like you really, I mean, you can hear a pin drop in the classroom when you're asked, like, you know, we have some standard questions like, where does money come from, for example? And so, you know, depending on where we are in that age band, like sometimes they get confused and they think that we're referencing you know, like a standard answer is trees. And it's interesting, only the United States still makes money with cotton and linen. Most of the other mints around the world use polymer. Like I'm Canadian and our Canadian money is polymer and British money is polymer. So it's really thin plastic. So anyways, that's a standard one, trees. And then it's, you know, the bank machine and then digital payment methods, right? This is really the first generation who are native to digital payment methods, and they confuse those ways to pay for things with how they're funded. So we're like, well, you know, the answer we're looking for is money comes from someone working hard to earn it. And you're not yet an adult income earner. So it's typically your parents, right? And we have a little conversation about wants versus needs. And we say, you know, sometimes when kids ask their parents for something and the answer is no, they think their parents are being mean or unkind. And we just want to help you out here. So there's nothing wrong with buying wants. Everybody does it. If somebody tells you they never buy wants, I'm like, don't believe them. They're a cyborg. They're not a human. However, wants and needs have to be balanced. And kids think about, they think about food, clothing, shelter. They don't think about things like access to education and healthcare, which the OECD says are human needs, right? So then we say to kids, now think about every month your parents are making sure that not only do you have a place to live and food to eat and clothes to wear, but you have a place to go and learn to read and write and be financially responsible. And if you're unwell, you have access to a physician so that you can become well. So just think about, it's a heavy lift, right?
Yeah.
And we just, and you should see like just the wave of understanding that washes over their faces. Like if I had a nickel for every time somebody said to me, no one ever explained it like that. The offense defense thing. I mean, that is, I pull that out of my back. I don't think I've done a workshop without it. So Farnoosh, let me ask you, what's your favorite sports team?
Oh gosh. I'm the worst person to ask. I would say, I'll say the Celtics because I was born in Massachusetts. I've already made so many enemies, I'm sure, having admitted that.
Okay, so how do the Celtics beat the Knicks? Actually, in any team sports setting, how does one team beat another team? They have to do something more than the other team. And I'm looking for a very simple answer, and it rhymes with door.
Score.
Right. So in basketball, how do you score? You move the ball down the court and you get it in the other team's basket. Mm-hmm. And that's called being offensive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But you score 10 points and the Knicks, New York Knicks, score 10 points and that's a tie. Nobody wins. So you need offense and
defense.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so it goes with managing your personal finances. Mm-hmm. Financial offense is earning an income. So when you're a child, you earn an income through allowance, birthday money, holiday money, babysitting, raking leaves, painting a fence, whatever. Financial defense is nothing other than spending what you earn with a plan. And I mean, of course, as you age, the spending is not just on items, but it's on healthcare and investments and retirement plans and 529s and these things. But for kids, we just want to make it really accessible. So we're like, you need offense, which is earning, but you need defense, which is to spend what you earn with a plan. And that is so liberating for kids because thinking before buying does not mean that you never get to do or buy anything fun. I mean, I'll actually say to them, do I strike you as no fun? You know, I've sort of got my whole, I'm like, I'm a fun person. Like I'm not here to rob your young lives of fun. Thinking before buying means one thing, you plan your spending and that helps you avoid disappointment, reduce waste, improve family harmony and protect the planet. They're very interested in the environmental impact of their consumer decisions, right? We talk about how thinking before buying is the easiest way to be a planet protector because when you only buy what you'll actually use and appreciate by default, you're reducing your carbon footprint and the number of items you're going to put into a landfill in your lifetime.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
When it comes to maintaining good financial health, I think a key component is being able to track your progress, to see all of your investments and retirement accounts in one place. Now, thanks to our sponsor, Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views from multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. As a financial journalist and as an investor, Yahoo Finance has been my go-to site for years to access the tools and data behind the markets. It's also where I like to get a holistic view of the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, research charts, and so much more. Yahoo Finance is also where you can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com. That's YahooFinance.com. You want to know what's worse than shopping for jeans? Shopping for bras. It's never been fun for me until Third Love came into my life. Third Love was launched to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. They make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen probably since high school and have straps that actually stay put. Third Love's bras are designed at their headquarters in San Francisco, and they're made from premium materials. They put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before they're given the stamp of approval. And whether you're a double A or an H cup, their virtual fitting room can help find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups, so long feeling stuck between two cup sizes that just don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. That's thirdlove.com to get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. Yeah, it's so true. And speaking of items going into a landfill, there's so much stuff that kids, especially starting as young as my daughter's grade, that they want, right? It's like, I refuse now to buy. I just put my foot down. Like, this is not, I don't care what the score says. I'm not buying any more of these minis. It's like miniature brands. Moms, dads, you know what I'm talking about. If you've got a kid who's like 5, 6, 7, it's these, they come in like an eggshell. You get them at Target. You open it up. It's like 20 of these tiny, they're cute. You know, they're tiny little like soda can bottles and detergent boxes that look like the real thing, but they're tiny. So you would put them in your dollhouse or your, you know, whatever, but it's just crap. And I'm not buying it. It's just going to go into a landfill. Fast forward to middle school. I just contributed to an article for Yahoo about what to do when my kid comes home. She's in sixth grade. He's in fifth grade. And they want all the things. They want the Stanley Cup. And, you know, to an extent, right, to an extent, this is not just about I want the shiny object because it's cute. It's because this is going to be my ticket to the right friend group, to being accepted, to not getting made fun of. And so how do you balance that? That's not in the score, is it? You know, and I know that we can't buy everything and just for the sake of like acceptance. But I think this is where parents get really stuck, is that, you know, saying no to certain things that are status symbols in school, there's going to be a consequence, an emotional consequence for your kid potentially. And so, you know, do you just make them get tougher by saying no and just, you know, teaching them a lesson now? Or how do you balance that?
I think there's two things to unpack there. I think first of all, shopping is so frictionless today. It's so frictionless, right? Like I always make the kids laugh. I'm like, a million years ago when dinosaurs roamed the planet and I was in school, there were no computers. Okay. Like we did everything with paper and pencil. And here's how, as a child, I would get to go shopping. So I worked at the Dairy Queen when I was a kid. I remember begging my parents the minute I was allowed to work at the Dairy Queen. I couldn't wait to get there.
Love the Dairy Queen.
So we got a paper check, right? And then you had to Yeah, every other week. So you waited 2 weeks and then you went to the bank and you had to stand in line and cash the check. And if you didn't have as much money in your account as the check was for, which was often the case when you were a 13-year-old Dairy Queen summertime employee, you had to wait for that check to clear, right? And then you had to take the cash money to the store. Stores were only open from like 10:30 to 5:30 Monday to Saturday. There was no Sunday store. Right. Nothing was open at night.
What did we do back then?
Right? So think about it. I mean, one of our most popular blog posts is remember shopping from your bed at midnight. And the answer, of course, is you don't, because you couldn't do it. So then you got to the store, you had to beg your mother to take you to the store, right? Most of us drove to stores and malls. And then the store had to have exactly what you wanted, like right size, model, color, the whole thing. And here's the kicker. You had to have every dime necessary for that transaction on your person. You could not Venmo your mother. She couldn't interact you. There wasn't Apple Pay. Nobody had a magic box. But every one of those so-called friction points was this wonderful opportunity to say, do I really want this? Is it really going to make my life better? Is it really going to improve the life of the person that I'm buying it for? So if you think about it, fear of missing out and buyer's remorse, which are aided and abetted in today's frictionless spending environment, are a function of speed. Mm-hmm. The Does It Make Sense score calculator is a speed bump. Yeah. Takes 3 minutes, just slows you down enough to make sure that you're not spending your money or asking your parents to spend theirs on something that actually isn't even really going to float your boat for that long.
I'm writing all this down because I think this would make great content for social media. I'm going to use these quotes. Well, no, so this funny. Is how my brain works now. I'm like, that'll go viral on social. And I'm usually right because I have a really good sense of what people's behavioral tendencies are, what they're going to click on, what they need to know, what they haven't learned already. And this topic of friction points and spending speed bumps, we haven't like invented anything new in this conversation, but the way that you're characterizing it is so accessible and fun to talk about. Like, you know, it's kind of like using the modern lingo. But you're absolutely, and there's even data to back this up, right? That even with like paying with a credit card versus using cash, when they do the studies, those that use the credit card spend more frequently versus cash, because as the behavioral scientists and economists call it, there is pain. You say friction, they say pain associated with these decision points where if it's cash, you actually have to think about, if I give this $10 to Dairy Queen, that means I only have $5 left and I really wanted to buy whatever, fill in the blank. And so then now you have to actually make a choice. Whereas right now, I feel like with all this frictionless spending, we have all the choices. We can do all the things. At least that's what it feels like. And then we get into a lot of trouble. All right, let's go down your list. I have a couple of other things I want to hit. Your observations about kids and money. And one is that kids actually have more of a sense of their household financial capacity than parents assume, and sometimes probably more than kids let on. But I think this is really important for parents to hear. Like, what are kids observing and how are they interpreting?
I see it time and time and time again. So if you think about it, calculating the Does It Make Sense score is sort of divided into two parts. The first part is like the raw math of it, right? So literally, like this is, I'll say to them, okay, so pretend you had a job and you discovered a tool that could let you do twice as much work in half the time. And you wanted to go and talk to your boss about buying the tool. Because, you know, this whole thing, your parents aren't the boss of you. Yes, they are. Okay. Yes, they are.
Yeah.
And what's the first question that boss is going to ask? How much is the tool? Right.
Yeah.
So I'm like, don't go to your parents and ask for something if you don't even know how much it costs. I can't even tell you how many times, like they don't have any idea. So, you know, it's not that children are thoughtless. They're genuinely inexperienced. Like your daughter, it was a total epiphany to her that dance classes could cost $200. What is it? Like, why not $1 million? Right? That's what she's thinking. So it lets them gather information and sort of become sensitized to it. they stop themselves before they even get to the part of the questionnaire that's about, is this an upgrade you need because, you know, you're going from middle school to high school or you've grown out of your old basketball shoes. As soon as they see the math and they see a number, I can't tell you how many times they've said, oh, no, this is too much. They hear conversations, right? I mean, children are sponges, right? They're very present. They're not thinking about who's going to cut the grass. What are we going to have for dinner? Did I pay the insurance bill? They're sort of just like right there humming beside you the whole time, right? So they see it all. And the one thing that I love about workshops is we normalize that money is scarce for many families and finite for all.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So like we always start out with, has anybody here ever received a holiday or a birthday gift that wasn't quite what they were hoping for? Right. And the teachers are, oh, they're the best because they usually throw their hand up.
Oh, the 80s kids know, the 80s and 90s. Because, you know, to your point, there wasn't this vastness when it came to consumer accessibility. It was like you had to, and also things ran out much faster in the 80s. They just didn't produce them enough. Like I wanted a Cabbage Patch doll. And so my parents got me the fake Cabbage Patch doll. Bless them. It has only scarred me a little bit. I've moved on, sort of.
So, but when they see that literally everybody in the whole class has received something that wasn't what they were hoping for, and we don't ask that question to induce a lack of gratitude, what we then it legs into a very natural conversation about, okay, so, I mean, one of my favorites was these two brothers, this was 3 years ago, and they had been hoping for Xbox for Christmas, and they got a karaoke machine, and they were devastated. But I said, okay, your poor grandparents, let's talk about the process they went through. This was the belly of the pandemic. So they're standing on those little spots on the pavement outside the store, right? Staying 6 feet away from everybody. Then they finally get in the store. They pick the thing out. Then they stand in line again to pay for it. Then they take it home and wrap it. That family had a restaurant. That's where their pod met. They take it to the restaurant. So I said to these brothers, like, do you think they went, forget about how much money was spent. Do you think they went to all that effort just hoping that you'd be disappointed? But unfortunately, it takes time and money even to buy things that may never be used or appreciated. So that shareable summary is a tool that lets you graciously ask for what it is you will really use and appreciate. And if it comes with a big price tag, then crowdsource it. I mean, aunts and uncles, extended family members that live out of town, how do they really know what's your jam, what you're really going to use and appreciate, right? All they know is they don't want to show up empty handed. And it's very hard for parents. I mean, we ask our nieces and nephews, our grandchildren, we say to their parents, what is it that they would really like? And unfortunately, even parents are reticent, right? You don't want to say they want a $100 hockey stick. So, you know, you sort of pussyfoot around. So this is, it's just a terrific way for them to not get repeat gifts. You know, somebody knows you like Harry Potter and you just keep, I mean, you get the Harry Potter toothbrush, beach blanket, bookends, forget about the books. And you're like, that was 8 years ago. Please release me. So you get to demonstrate, you know exactly how much money is involved. You are really going to use and appreciate it because you've thought about it. You know what your recourse is if it fails to delight or perform as intended, right? The two questions we ask all the time are, what's the return policy? What's the warranty? Do you know the difference between those two things? Yeah. One is the rules that a retailer imposes to get your money back or an item replaced. The other are rules that a manufacturer imposes. And none of that information is hard to uncover, right? Price, sales tax, shipping, duty. I mean, many Canadian kids want to bring things across the border, so it has a duty charge on top of it. Return policies, warranties, you know, if somebody else can use it. We literally calculate cost per use, like how many months of the year can you wear these jeans? You know, or if it's even technology, does your family have a technology timeout period? Do you go to summer camp and you can't use technology? And then it's how many months of the year, how many times per week? And then we calculate cost per use. And that's always an interesting conversation. Like they get the number and they're like, wow, you know, I'm like, so is it bigger or smaller? Like, did you actually think it was going to be 67 cents every time you put that on?
Yeah. And I love the cost per use, short math, quick math. It's something else. Well, you mentioned Canada. Your company is based in Canada, but you help you work all over, right?
Well, we're a Canadian, federally registered Canadian not-for-profit, but this has been the fantastic thing about the pandemic. We started Zooming, and we Zoom with kids from Maryland to Malaysia.
Like, wow.
It's everywhere.
And so, I should have asked this earlier, but tell us a little bit about how you got started in this. Like, I know you have a background as an economist, but when would the light bulb go off for this company?
So I'm a twin. I have a twin sister. And when you're a twin, a very common question is, what's it like to be a twin? It's like living, because that's all you know, right? Being a twin for me is like being alive, because from day one, there was Kathy, right?
Yeah.
We grew up in a family with a very clever mother. She was a kindergarten teacher. And I'm telling you, Betty Holland could stretch a dollar like no one's business. And it's how we grew up. And we got an allowance starting in middle school. This was so brilliant. I share this with parents all the time. The summer before grade 7, she wanted us to anticipate all the expenses we would have for the coming year. You know, Bonnie Bell lip smackers, Gee, Your Hair Smells Terrific shampoo, burgundy penny loafers. Think about all the things that they were good then, right? And she let us come up with this list. And of course, we thought that we'd thought of everything. Of course, we hadn't thought of half the things we'd need. And she knew that. And we took this number and she divided it by the number of months in the school year. And the first day of every month, we would get that amount of money and not one penny more. And guess what? We figured out pretty quickly, you know, I remember the burgundy penny loafers, I had to have them. And then I couldn't go to the movies with my friends. And I look back now, you know, my mother was a teacher, my father was an engineer. I mean, my mother could have given me the $5, but she didn't. And God bless her, because guess what I learned? I learned how to anticipate everything I would want to do throughout the month and, you know, how I would get the money and the crowding out effect of one purchase on another. So, you know, you grow up, and I had two sisters. I'm one of three girls, and that's all we knew. So then I get married, and we were married for 10 years before our son was born. And we laugh all the time. I thought I was going to get a piano playing girl, and I got a B-O-Y. And I spent a decade at baseball and hockey tournaments. I mean, people think I'm exaggerating. I am not, like, every weekend. So, you know, you're parent in a tribe, right? And you're spending time with all these families. And I'm realizing, as we're sitting on the sidelines of these games, that these siblings are coming up, especially if you're, again, a Canadian team in a U.S. city, and the parents are just being harangued morning, noon, and night. Can I? And we love words in my family. We're big Scrabble players. We love a TLA or an FLA. That's a 3-letter acronym or a 4-letter acronym. And I just sort of start, you know, I mean, when I know that my friends are happy for me to insert myself into the conversation, I would just say to them, like, what's the DIN score? Like, wait a minute. You got some skin in the game? Like, you spent some of your own money? Or wait a minute, you just got an old hickory bat like 2 weeks ago when we were in Ohio. And I just realize, and then the parents are like, no, keep it up. Go see Karen. And I'm like, wait a minute, this isn't how everybody operates, because you only know how you grow up. And, you know, the rest is sort of history. Like, I just thought
it's
about
homegrown. It's a homegrown.
These questions
company.
Are so, and the really exciting thing, the reason why thinking before buying is so powerful is because it convinces children that they can get and use financial information to make their lives better during the time in their life when their money personality is being developed. So it turns getting financial information from an intimidating task into a powerful tool. I mean, if you're an 11-year-old who can ask about a return policy or calculate cost per use, you almost can't help but become a 17-year-old who's going to go, now, wait a minute, let's really think about these different ways I could pay for college or what program I want to take, who almost can't become a 22-year-old woman, young woman, who says, okay, tell me about these starting salary bands, and what are the employer-sponsored saving programs like, and what's your family leave like? Like, I get so excited when people ask me about the difference between boys and girls, because my experience is there is no difference between 10 to 14-year-old boys and girls. They ask all the same questions about money. They have the same misconceptions. So you know what that means, Farnoosh. We can raise the first generation of young adults where young women continue to ask questions about money before making personal financial decisions with the same frequency as young men. And that is paving the way for the systemic change that we need.
It can go a very long way for sure. Karen Holland, thank you so much. Gifting Sense, everybody. Check it out. I'll put the link in our show notes. Really lovely conversation, empowering conversation. You gave us a lot to think about and do. Appreciate you.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate you too. I really do.
Thanks to Karen Holland for joining us. To learn more about Gifting Sense, check out giftingsense.org. I'll see you back here on Friday for Ask Farnoosh, and I hope your day is so money. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. You want to know what's worse than shopping for jeans? Shopping for bras. It's never been fun for me until Third Love came into my life. Third Love was launched to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. They make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen probably since high school and have straps that actually stay put. Third Love's bras are designed at their headquarters in San Francisco, and they're made from premium materials. They put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before they're given the stamp of approval. And whether you're a AA or an H cup, their virtual fitting room can help find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups, so long feeling stuck between two cup sizes that just don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. That's thirdlove.com to get $15 off your order with the code podcast15.